Music. Good evening, everyone. Were you bopping to our song? I know I was.
I was.
I was. Welcome to episode 127 of Restitching the Tapestry. It's good to see all of you. It's been a week.
A week and a half.
It has been a week. It has been a week.
Just a week.
It feels like it's been 1,000 years. It's been a week. Ari, how have you been and what has been going on in your world?
I have been dealing with the American healthcare system, and I have somehow come out alive, bruised, badly damaged. They put me in the gladiator pit, and I don't know about you, but when you get into the gladiator pit with the lions, if you don't have solid insurance, the lion will eat you alive. So what you have to do is just have to make sure that you wear solid gear and just go in fighting. It's a good thing I had a good support system. I had people backing me. They brought their spears and they were just ready to fight for me.
Oh my goodness. That is wild. Well, for me, my week, well, and you also had a stray cat that like managed to, we were talking about like cats in the back room. Tell your stray cat story.
Oh my God. So I went to go do my laundry yesterday. And I was putting my clothes from the washer into the dryer. And all of a sudden I hear this little, and I look over and there's this little kitten, less than a year old kitten, little long haired tortie. If you don't know what torties look like, it's just like this little, like, it looks like a calico, but it's not a calico. It's a tortie. Looks up at me from underneath the blinds in the window next to the dryer. Looks up at me with the most adorable eyes ever. And I'm like, oh, aren't you cute? What are you doing in here, laundry cat? And then it crawls out into the dryer and it's like, hello. Hello, how are you? I am the laundry cat. Someone has left me here because my owners are shit people and they just don't care about me. They wanted to leave me here and abandon me in the laundry room of the apartment building. And I was like, is it because they haven't registered you and they had to have someone do some work on the apartment and they didn't want to get in trouble? Probably, but let's go find your... Because this cat followed me up to my apartment after I put the stuff in the dryer and I was walking back. And I was like, oh, you're going to follow me home now, little kitten? And it was like, yes. And then it turned into a devil cat because it started hissing at me and it had little tortitude. If you don't know anything about torties, they have little angry devil.
They can be mean.
Started hissing at me, started hissing at poor Larity. Was like, this is my apartment now. And I was like, you know, you watch that, what's that movie where it's like, they looked at Tom Hanks and they're like, I'm the captain now. This cat looked at me and said, this is my apartment now. And I was like, oh, is it? Is it your apartment? And I was like, little cat, because I had already named the cat Deuteronomy. I said, little Deuteronomy, time to leave. Time to leave, little Deuteronomy. Time to go. Bye-bye.
Later. Oh, that's so wild to me. So speaking of cats, like you can always rely on me to have a poop story. So hear me out.
Story for you all. Alert.
So rewind 2 weeks ago. Britt and I got home and we found a mouse on our rug that one of the cats had murdered brutally. And it, I'm fairly sure, was our gray cat Phoebe. Because she's like the little huntress of the family. Gaby doesn't, he'll like play with something, but he won't like eat it or like eliminated or whatever.
He's just like most cats. He likes to torture his food.
Exactly. So like, I'm just like, thank you, cats. And I, you know, got rid of the mouse and everything like that. 2 weeks later, I went down to the basement to do some laundry and noticed a pile of cat vomit.
Which is gross.
It's super gross. It did not look normal. It didn't look like a fur ball. It didn't look like, it was like,
it, does it vomit looked like, ever look normal?
No, but like you can, there's like a standard, like texture, you know, like, so it looked like dried up spaghetti noodles. And that's like, oh God, it makes my skin crawl. That's like the sign of like worms. So we got worms from this mouse, and that upsets me because, like, I mean, we've taken her in, we've gotten her shots and like all of that stuff. So it's like, really? So I called the vet today. I'm just like, vet, no, I'm not dealing with it. Like, not no, worms. Nope. So I was like, can you put me on a wait list? Like, because there weren't any available appointments within like the next couple of days. And they were like, we don't do a wait list. Baffling. But so like, I asked them, I'm like, well, can you prescribe me like my medication for her? Oh no, I have to bring in a fecal sample for them to examine first. So I literally have to wait for Phoebe to shit. And then I have to take and put wormy shit in a plastic bag, a Ziploc bag, and then proceed to take it to the vet. So I'm just like, I feel like in the past I've just been prescribed worm medication before.
Just gonna like walk around with a little spatula, like, come here, come here.
Well, I asked them, I was just like, do you have like a sample container that I can come get? The vet's like literally right down the street from me. I was like, do you have a sample container that I can grab? Oh no, just bring it in a plastic bag or whatever. I'm like, okay, that's great. So, yay, that's exciting.
Your cat just has a friend now. It's called the worms.
Oh God. Oh, and I feel so bad for her because I'm just like, she just did what was instinct, right? So it's right. Like, ooh.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. So let's talk about current events. So I've not been really tuned into the news lately.
Oh my God.
Oh, Sophia's here.
Hello,
and
Sophia.
Hi, Sophia. And Arpy's here. Hello.
Hello, everybody.
So I haven't been super tuned into the news.
Do we want to talk about the Lizzo thing? Is it finally time to talk about the Lizzo thing?
We can discuss it in general. Like, it's just so hard. Like, to explain the situation.
Because we put off talking about the Lizzo thing. Like
we put off talking about it because we wanted more information about it. Because like, let's just say like in the past couple of weeks, like Lizzo's been the center of a lot of controversy because like some of her former dancers and stuff like that have accused Lizzo of some pretty
serious
horrifying things, some very serious stuff in some significant detail.
At first I was like, no, that can't be. I kind of went through the stages of grief. I was kind of like, no, like seriously denial. I was like, no, that can't be right. Lizzo, like Lizzo isn't that type of person. But then the more I heard about it, the more I was like, oh.
Well, and if you read the like documentation, like it has everything in it, very elaborate detail. I'm not going to like rehash any of the details here because I think it's a little too graphic for this. But
I just kind of, I'm just like at this point, I'm like accepting, and I'm just like, I believe these victims. That I'm like, yeah, Lizzo is not such a nice person that we thought.
Well, it's what's like. I think what's horrifying is that Lizzo has really kind of created like this specific image, like an image of empowerment, of like empowering women and like body positivity and stuff like that. And like a lot of the statements that have been released have demonstrated
that she's the opposite. Yeah.
Right. So that was like, that was kind of like a shock to everyone's systems. And I think that's why a lot of people had to like kind of be like, wow, like what is happening? So we're going to follow the situation to see what happens. But I think, I mean, considering tonight's topic is about digital footprints and online presence and stuff like that, like it's interesting to see that like her digital footprint involves like creating like this persona, right? And then we see that what's happened seems to be the exact opposite of what that persona reflected. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's sad, but it's
definitely, there's definitely like a certain amount of, when you're a celebrity, about curating an image and about, mm-hmm. about cultivating a personality, and that, that there's a certain amount of like paying to make yourself this shiny, perfect object of attention that like, that it's almost like you become like this perfect, can do no wrong, you know,
right.
God of like,
well, yeah, you become, you know, a spectacle, and you become representation too, right? Like people look up to you for various different reasons, right? Being that social platform has power.
Well, the thing about it is that I think that it corrupts, it could corrupt even the most innocent a person. Mm-hmm. And that I think that what happens is you get into these positions of power, and that I think it goes through your head that you think that you are above certain things. And that especially when you make friends with the people who are supposed to be your subordinates, you kind of create this like buddy-buddy atmosphere. And what it was is these were her employees, and she did not treat them like her employees.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yep. So in other news, there's a lot going on in Hawaii right now with climate again, fires. I think it's the island of Maui.
Six people are dead.
Yeah, six people. There's been like some massive fires on Maui. And like a lot, of course, like a lot of like in mass, like tourists are evacuating Hawaii and being shipped to different islands. There's, of course, I've been on TikTok. There's been a lot of people really mad about like the tourism industry.
And I'm like, not really like, mad about the tourists. I'm worried about the Native Islanders. That's who I care about. Because screw the tourists. What about the Native Islanders, people who live there? People who are like,
well, a lot of Native Islanders are mad about the tourists there.
Yeah.
Because like they're not only consuming their resources and occupying their resources, but like also impacting the environmental quality there, like etc.
Yeah.
And when natural disasters like this happen, it takes like those existing problems and exasperates them even further. You know?
Well, and especially with the evacuation and stuff, like they're using up the resources that Native people could be using too. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing, like, and so, because it's like they get first dibs on that stuff because they're kind of in a more like, you know, like they,
yeah.
Because they, it's just worse because they clog the airports and they have more resources to, you know, travel and things like that, where maybe a Native person might not have the resources to be able to evacuate as easy.
Well, and not to mention, like, I think the whole tourism industry over there has also caused the cost of living in Hawaii to be outrageously expensive. Mm-hmm. So like there are a lot of like marginalized communities over there who aren't even able to sustain themselves at all.
Right.
Which simply because of the cost of living. So hopefully everyone will be okay. Like it's kind of scary what's happening over there right now. And I hope that people start realizing that like we need to start caring about marginalized communities, even like Like when it comes to
didn't we just have a discussion about this last week about how climate change was going to affect marginalized communities? And this is exactly what I was talking about. This was one of the things that I specifically said about how things like climate change was going to affect marginalized communities.
Exactly. Yeah. So tonight's your turn to do the mission statement.
I have it all queued up. So here we go. We live in a dynamic society where social media shapes us by creating greater opportunities for connection. It has led to a developing understanding of the adversity many marginalized communities face, the powers causing the adversity, and those who act as bystanders as atrocities take place in real time. Our goal with this show is to make connections and have challenging conversations about social topics, current events, pop culture, and art. Together, let's weave the threads of understanding with what privilege we have in order to learn, educate, and create in a world that's growing.
Bam.
Bam.
Bam. Oh my gosh. So I think that we've really been looking forward to talking about tonight's topic for a long time.
Yes, we have.
Mostly because, like, we've had a digital presence for a very, very long time, you know, since the internet was young a long, long time ago, but, like, since social media was young.
We've both grown up on the internet. But the thing about it is, I've been curious to talk about this topic because I just did something very drastic, just not even that recently, about deleting part of my social presence online, that I deleted 15 years worth of content, which was, and this isn't the first time that I've deleted whole swaths of, I've deleted Facebooks in the past that had years worth of content I've deleted it because my friend Chelsea, I've lost people in the past that, you know, friends and family have, you know, not been alive anymore. And seeing that history of those pictures and those posts and those messages, it just became overwhelming. And so I would delete Facebooks over and over again. But then, like this last time I deleted my Facebook, it was because I had lost access to it after my manic episode. And so I wasn't able to access it. But then when I was able to re-access that Facebook, is just all of those memories of that time in Seattle when I was, you know, living there. It's just like, I didn't want to have access to that anymore. So I just deleted it.
Yeah. Social media can kind of, like, if you're going through a traumatic experience, kind of like be a snapshot of that trauma, which can be kind of like, it can be kind of triggering for some, right? Like mm-hmm. sometimes, like, if you find yourself getting lost in that again, like, that's not healthy. Larity agrees with me.
Yes.
Well, okay, so let's define what a digital footprint is. Like, how would you define a digital footprint?
So it's the ephemera, the digital ephemera of your life. So it's video, it's photos, it's the you know, text updates and text posts of your life, depending on the platform. So like it's, you know, there's old, you know, it's the archive posts of, like, you know, MySpace or Facebook or your old Twitter accounts. But even it's the archive posts that you find on, say, like the Wayback Machine. There are archived archived video or archive posts from my Dr. Strangelove 17 account back on the Wayback Machine that you can see of my old YouTube channel from way back when, archived from like 2009. You can see old snapshots of my old channel back from those days.
Right. Oh, Sapphire Zeev is here. Hello. It's good to see you. Hope you've been doing well. No, like, I actually was just introduced. What is that place called again? Wayback?
The Wayback Machine. Oh, I love the Wayback Machine. It is like the best. Have you ever looked at do you want to see if we can find, do you want to see if we can find your old channel on the Wayback Machine to see what it looks like, if there's any captures on there?
I can look it up and see.
Wayback Machine. It's the Internet Archive. So what they do is they scroll the internet, and if you have enough hits on your post, you can see if you can see if your channel.
I don't know if it's going to load for me because I'm streaming. Oh, wait.
This page is available on the web, Donnie Winter.
Oh, that wasn't my old YouTube channel.
What's your old YouTube channel?
My old YouTube channel was X Mystic Moth X.
S Mystic Moth X. Let's look it up.
Mine is loading. Mine is thinking. I'm very curious about this. Well, no, like, so I was introduced to this a lot, like, probably about a couple of months ago, and I decided to look up. So, our next question, this is going to lead into that. Our next question is, how would you describe the history of your online presence over the years? When did it begin? Mine began using freewebs.com. I don't know if you remember Freewebs that much. I created a Mothra website called Mothra's Domain. Because, oh, it's not working for me. Oh, well. So I created this website called Mothra's Domain. And I think it was like when MySpace first, well, no, it was before MySpace, but like I had like learned coding a little bit. So I coded like this website to like have all of my Godzilla fanfics. And then I had like, I programmed it to have like little like, but like monarch butterflies flying across the screen and everything like that. It was wild. And I found it through Wayback, and I was just like, oh my God, I forgot what it even looked like. It was so cool.
I'll have to look it up and see if I can find it on there, because we should have looked it up before we did the episode. I should have thought to look on there, because
I know I should have thought of that too. So Sapphire Azif says, like, to compete with Barry's Temple of Godzilla, that I think Barry's Temple of Godzilla still exists. That's like one of the old guard Godzilla sites. But from like, honestly, it was just like a place to keep my fan fiction.
So I originally started on a couple different places. I originally started on AOL.com. I also had a Yahoo. I did Yahoo chat, but I was on AOL.com. I was in their internet chat rooms. My original name was MS Tenesia, T-E-N-E-S-I-A. Oh. It was all upper and lowercase because that was my pen name. That was my pen name back in the day, Miss Tenesia. And I don't know why I chose the blackest all of history, but I was like, you know what? I'm going to be at Miss Tunisia. That's my name. That's my name. I was just like, you know what? I like it. I think it's a very interesting name. That's my pen name.
Do you want to know what mine was? Megamoth 47 was mine.
Mm-hmm. So it was my very emo name. My very cool internet slang name. But then I was also on LiveJournal. I was on LiveJournal as Dr. Strangelove on there, Dr. Strangelove 17. And I met some people through LiveJournal that I'm still friends with today. So I had a LiveJournal for a while. I also had a MySpace, but I didn't use MySpace as much because it didn't load very fast because it was the slowest. You know, yeah. There's problems with MySpace because people would have like, you know, they would have like the music and the cursor and all of the pictures and stuff. It would take a billion years for their page to load. I thought it was cool, but also it would take forever to load.
Yeah, I remember the woes of dial-up. Like, it took so long. So, I also use LiveJournal. One of my early my username on there, I think, still is Majestic Insect. Nice. So, like, I went between Megamoth 47, Majestic Insect, and then I went to Eternal Mothra. And then, like, on MySpace during my emo days, like, it was, like, some sort of like Evanescence, Mothra, blah, something like combining my really emo worlds together. It was a lot. Oh, DeviantArt as well. Like, RP just said I deleted DeviantArt because I don't like how they changed.
I'm kind of hoping that some of the, like, old chats and stuff that I have, like, on Yahoo don't exist anymore because the people that I talked to back in the day, because I was a person who was, I'm just going to say this straight up, I was a young girl who in the early days of the internet was basically groomed by old men in BDSM chat rooms and very highly sexualized, highly objectified online. So I was coerced into sending pictures of myself in various positions of undress and doing things that I don't know how comfortable I felt I would feel today doing online. But since I was 17 and I was not healed and I because I did not get the validation I needed from my family or the support system around me, I sought that validation online. And so it was very difficult for me. So I'm afraid that there are pictures floating of myself online that are not great pictures of me in various positions. So that's why, like, often I think that I struggle with having a digital footprint online is because there is this fear that there are pictures of myself floating around out there on the interweb of myself in compromising positions.
Yeah. No, like, it's interesting that you mentioned that. First, thank you for sharing that. Like, that takes a lot of strength to be able to share something like that. I remember some things very similar in my experience when I was first coming out. Because, like, honestly, when I was first coming out, or at least first having feelings and understanding, like, my sexual identity, like, I, like, was on, like, gay forums, like, for webs, like, gay websites and stuff like that. And I would often, like, there would be people, like, having inappropriate conversations with me, and they were, like, way, way, way older than me. And I think, unfortunately, for a lot of people in the LGBTQ plus community, that, like, this is a pretty, you know, standard experience, which is kind of horrifying to think. I mean, when it comes to, like, the early to mid 2000s, right? But I remember, like, being on those sites, and, like, they were, like, my first real, like, exposure to being LGBTQ+. And, of course, then it branched into, like, Yahoo. Like, I was friends with a lot of people on Yahoo Messenger and AOL Instant Messenger and stuff like that. And, like, photos, etc. Like, like, I did a lot on the internet when I was, like, before I came out, because, like, I just craved putting myself out there so much that, like, I was willing to do anything I could to get that validation as well, like, to just have that, like, oh, I exist kind of a thing, if that makes sense.
And I think, like, there's a lot, I don't know how parents, millennial and Gen X parents are these days, but they know, they've been through the war, you know, of what it was like to crave and need that validation and having that sense of oversharing through that, being that unhealed person of needing that validation from people who will use and abuse that for their own needs and various purposes. And so I think that with the younger generation, because you see it on, like, Reddit and stuff today, like, you know, you see younger women, like, you know, Gen Z and maybe even, like, younger people who are, like, asking to be rated and, like, asking what can I do to fix myself and things like that. And it's sort of like, you know, been there about, like, having, you know, showing things that you know, feeling like needing that validation or needing that, like, sense.
And the people, well, and the people who, like, kind of, because there are people who have social power in these spaces who will facilitate this and like, remember the YouTuber Onision, right? Like, that, like, whole surrounding that controversy because, like, of course, a whole variety of different things, but he was, like, rating people and like, encouraging, like, body shaming and stuff like that. Like, it was really, really messed up, and I can only imagine how many other spaces that would occur.
You remember the website hotornot.com?
Oh, my. I forgot about that site. Yes, I do remember it. Ooh.
Do you remember the... I used to have trauma associated with hotornot.com.
Yeah,
I feel like we all did. We have a collective trauma associated. Like, I am not hot enough for hotornot.com.
Yeah, like, no wonder why we're so burdened by, like, you know, body dysmorphia and stuff these days. Let's see. Sapphire Zeeb says, yes, I remember the same... which when you look back on, you're like, yikes. Yeah, like, I often have moments of yikes, too. And in some ways, as our lives became so digital, the algorithms that increasingly make us all think that we aren't enough in every way, the degree of body dysmorphia worsens each year, and filters and all the lousy advice and input from superficial people online. Yeah, there's been kind of, like, this culture created, like, this help culture when it comes to, like, social media that's very superficial that I think that... Wellness, is it called wellness culture or something to that effect?
Oh, yeah, like the goop wellness culture,
like wellness gurus. We could do a whole separate episode on that.
Culture.
Yeah, we could do a whole episode
every day.
Oh my god. So like for me, like my online presence shifted, like, and after I came out, like I then focused a little bit more on like Godzilla message boards and stuff like that. So like I stayed with like in my little genre nooks and I felt safe for a while as a result. But then of course, big social media happened, like Facebook and stuff like that. And then of course, YouTube, so on and so forth. My first YouTube, oh, go ahead.
Before all of that, do you remember Angel Fire websites? Did you ever have an Angel Fire website?
Or a GeoCities website?
Oh my God. I totally had a GeoCities. My mom got so mad at me back in 2002. She was like, you cannot criticize the president. You're going to get arrested.
Oh my.
You can't say bad things about the president online. The FBI is going to come and arrest you.
Oh, my God.
Because I made a website where I was talking bad about Bush.
Was it a GeoCities website?
It was a GeoCities. My mom found my website, and she says, you can't talk bad about Bush. They're going to arrest you and make you a political prisoner.
Oh God. Oh, Sapphire Zeeb. Oh yeah, we definitely had MySpace. I wrote the most sad emo poetry in MySpace. I'm kind of angry because MySpace did away with its blogging feature and I lost all of those.
That's why all of our generation casually knows how to code. We all casually. Right. Like I worked at a real estate company, and I was coding there for a while. And they're like, "Where did you learn how to code?" I'm like, "I'm a millennial.
Like, I am multi-talented because
I think they thought that I was a shit coder though. But like, I definitely knew how to do basic HTML code. Like, basic. If you are a millennial, like, you could get a job in Seattle as a coder. Like, you could do basic coding.
If you ever
made a GeoCities website, you know how to code. You can.
Did you ever create like a forum or anything like that before?
I have made forums. I know how to code. Like,
yeah, like, so like between MySpace and like my site Kaiju Galaxy, which still exists, like I used to do so much, like I used to make like skins and backgrounds and stuff like that. Like, soup, like I feel like for our generation, definitely coding was like a very central like skill that we developed over time. So
like I could probably make, like I think I know how to make a table in code if I really wanted to, if I really like stretched my imagination and like looked up.
The closest I come to Java is a cup of coffee. That I love me a good
pun. I don't think I could do C plus or like C plus plus or like C plus 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 plus, but like I could probably do Java like pretty well.
Right. So, how different would you describe your online presence now versus the way it was years ago? Like, I mean, we've already kind of shared a little bit.
Oh, hang on. Let me go get it. Hang on, kitten.
Oh, no. Well, honestly, while Ari's getting whatever they're getting, for me, like, it was, like, obviously I went from, like, forums and stuff like that to, like, creating content, like fan fiction to creating content, like videos and stuff like that.
I'm trying not to use my cell phone anymore. I have my little book now. So this is, I'm trying to not be online anymore. I try not to put stuff online. I just try to use my little book.
Toward the end of the video, like I know that we're going to also talk about like some advice. I think sharing with people your experience with that's going to be super helpful, especially if they need to detach from social media just a little bit.
But like the thing about it is I have like journals and stuff. Like I do like morning pages and stuff, like the Julia Cameron morning pages, and I've been doing some of my writing in pen and paper, and I've been transferring it to documents. But I'm doing basically like I'm trying to like I want to get like a dumb phone, like a flip phone,
de-technologize.
But basically like I'm becoming more of a Luddite, like the idea of like I bought a digital camera, and so I'm going to do all of my filming with like just like one of those point shoot old style digital cameras from like 2010, like one of those old 2005 point and shoot digital cameras. So then I'm not tempted to use my phone during the day, but I want to backlog, and I bought a bunch of records today too. But I basically just want to, my online presence, I'm trying to kind of limit the amount of online presence that I have. I basically, don't use Instagram for anything more than just like a private account. Now I have a public account that I use. That I have Instagram for. I have the Dr. Strange Girl account that I don't use. And I had a Twitter, but I deleted it when it became X, because don't text the X. Don't text the X. Because screw Elon Musk and screw his whatever. I don't use it. So I don't use Twitter anymore. So I have, the only things that I have are Facebook and a private Instagram that I use.
And YouTube, if you count YouTube among
those. I have YouTube, my YouTube accounts. I use those. I have three YouTube accounts. I have technically four, but I don't use one of them.
So I don't know if you feel this way too, but for me, like using YouTube feels different than using other social media. Like when it comes to other, so like, I feel like YouTube, like I can put out what I need to put out and keep.
Oh, and I have LinkedIn. I have LinkedIn now.
Oh, yeah, that's cool. I have a LinkedIn, too.
We should be friends on LinkedIn.
Let's be friends on LinkedIn. Well, like, so it's interesting. So I love social media a lot. I do. Like, I don't know if I could, like, cold turkey, like, just remove myself from social media. Mostly because, like, now it's kind of become, like, my only contact with a lot of people. Especially people who live a long way away. But I've also gotten to the point in my life where, and I think we've talked about this before, but like social media, especially YouTube itself, has kind of become like this repository for my like self-growth journey, like when it comes to like my mental health and stuff like that. So like, I'm at this point now where I'm able to like go back and look at my prior stuff without like losing myself to whatever headspace I was in at the moment. Like, I know that like, having the power to be able to delete and to be able to like move forward from that is important though. If there is a time in my future where I want to do that, I know that I have the power to do that. And that feels empowering to me.
Unless you have a Threads account and then you can't delete your account. You can only deactivate it.
That is true. That is true. I don't really, like I got a Threads, but I barely use it. I barely use it. But so we live in a time where social media has become a huge driving force in various aspects of society. So, like, what makes it important? I mean, if we really strip it down to basics, obviously it's made the world way more connected than it ever has been.
I think that's the problem about social media, though, too, is because they talked about this in books, and sorry for bringing up dystopias when I'm talking about social media. I know that's so cliche to talk about, you know, dystopias when talking about social media. But in Brave New World, they talk about just the advent of just the overabundance of information. Mm-hmm. That the problem is that it's not that there's information. It's just that there's an overabundance of information that it's like information coming from you at all angles at all times. And there's just so much information coming from you for you at all moments, at all times. And it's like, mm-hmm. it's almost like it's like this, overload of sensory experience. You know, when I did this yesterday, and even into today, the turning off my phone for the first few hours, just even not having that, because I just started this social experiment, not reaching for my phone to like play music, even that I had to put on a record and that I didn't reach for my phone to do like using a calculator, or that if I had an idea to look up something and just having to sit with that for a moment of not knowing and being okay with not knowing this immediate second.
That's interesting.
And just,
I think it's
just
empowering too.
Well, just allowing my brain to think through it and just like thinking of the answer myself. Because sometimes I know the answer. It's just allowing myself to sit with that and being like, yeah, I already know the answer to this.
I think if we're going to be completely blunt, like, technology can be very addicting. And like, I think that like we feel like sometimes like being empowered can be intoxicating, right? And I think when we realize that we have that much access to technology or to information, right? Like, that really can be a very tempting type of thing to have to navigate through. I know, like, in my own experience, like, so I used to, especially like in the late 2000s when I was like on forums and stuff like that, I would spend hours and hours and hours just like being on the internet. And it's, I feel like I'm still on the internet relatively often still. But, like, I've gotten to the point now where I'm able to put things away and be like, okay, I can live in the moment. I can go out in my garden. I can go enjoy my garden for a while with, like, and not even have my phone on me. Like, that was a huge thing that I've been trying to do this summer. Like, I want to go outside and not have my phone on me so I can actually enjoy what I'm doing without like that lingering thought in the back of my mind, like, oh, check this or post that or look this up, you know, because it is very overwhelming when you think about it.
Well, have you ever just like when you're writing or doing something or doing some kind of work, have you ever just turned your phone on airplane mode and just put your phone away, or turned your phone off and just put it away?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Like even like, so like I would say the majority of my creative writing I do on the computer, like in a Word document. I've gotten to the point now where I literally will just turn that off as well and just journal and just write it in a journal, which has been really like, now, like when I'm doing drafting and like editing and stuff like that, I'll type everything up and make edits and stuff like that. But like, it feels freeing to not have that pressure of immediacy, because I feel like that immediacy is what that is the correct word, right? The immediacy, like that is, I think, what creates that pressure, that especially that performative pressure too, right? Mm-hmm. And to be frank, like at this point in our lives as well, like we have created online like presences. Like we do this, for example, we have like our own respective channels. Like there is a certain performative expectation that I think that we have too, that we have to like, be like, okay, there's a time and a place. At least that's for me.
But the thing about it is, when it comes to being online, I think the thing that I don't do anymore that I used to do is that I don't share everything anymore. And I think that's something that since deleting my channel and coming back is that when I'm having a bad day, or if I have like a fight, or if I have like a negative experience, because some people still do this. And I don't think that everything needs to be online. Like there was a woman who was arguing with her husband, and she was mad at him because she thought he had brought home the wrong vegetable from the store. She was like, my husband didn't bring home celery. He brought home this. And she held up what was quite literally celery because she didn't know her vegetables apart. So she thought it was bok choy, but she literally asked him to bring celery home, and he brought celery home, and she was chastising him through social media as a way of, like, I don't know, trying to humiliate him, I guess, or something.
Ooh, but I don't like that.
The stuff like that. That's what I'm saying. It's like, mm-hmm. not everything needs to be online. If you're having like a fight with somebody, that stuff doesn't need to be online. Like that stuff, because right. that stuff doesn't age well. It doesn't even age well in the present. And that's what I'm saying. Like if you're angry, or if you're upset, or if you're having like a bad mood, I just tend to not post the negative stuff online anymore, because it's sort of like, if I post that, that's going to ripple effect online. You don't.
And it kind of manifests in a way too, right?
Right. And I don't like to post the negativity online anymore, because I don't want to share and spread negativity online. I only want to post. And like, I understand, like, you don't want to post like fake positivity, and like, you don't want to put on like a happy, shiny face for like a camera. I'm not doing that. But what I am doing is, when I genuinely feel good, I'm going to post. And if I don't feel good, I'm not going to post.
Yeah. Well, see, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because there's a question a little bit later. It says, like, what did we learn about online connectivity through the pandemic? And I think that was one big thing that a lot of people have learned. So obviously, I feel like social media kept a lot of people connected through the pandemic, right? But I think that people also began to realize just how abused social media is often, like when it comes to just like that constant, like, need to know everything. Like I'm speaking from experience. I used to be that person, especially like way back when Facebook was young, I would post everything. I'd be like, I'm having green beans. I'd be like, oh, that guy looked at me the wrong way. Does he have a crush on me? Ugh. I'd be like, oh my God, I pooped. Or, you know, like just stupid.
To be fair though, Donnie, I love your pee pee poo poo stories. They're really funny.
I know. And then I would post like emo, like ridiculous. I'd be like, nobody loves me. Everybody hate, like just very attention getty stuff. Now, like
Do you remember the days when Instagram was all about like posts about like what people were eating that day? It was just pictures of
God. It was
food porn.
It was exhausting. It was exhausting.
I don't mind people's food porn, but it's like, how many times are you going to post your sandwich? The same sandwich every single day.
I only mind food porn when they have to attach some sort of like inspiration porn story to it, where they're just like, oh, back in the 1920s, my grandmother,
you know what?
Made
I want
this
a whole account
and
where it's the same person posting the same food every single day for the rest of their lives. And it's because, you know what it means? It means that they have some kind of, you know, schedule of, this is what I eat. I eat the same thing every single day. I want that. I want that account.
That would be really funny. That would be funny. Now, like, okay, now there are a lot of people who love posting frequently, and there's no shame in that. Like, I still post frequently, like on YouTube and on Twitter when I'm like ranting about things. But I think that knowing when to allow yourself that freedom from that pressure, like, that's important, right?
Yeah.
And I think that we've gotten to the point in our lives where we have gotten to that, right? So how can being invisible online versus having a presence be an advantage? Well, like, kind of re-owning your time, right? That would be one thing.
Well, I think that being invisible online has its advantages because if you're not putting all of that information out online, you can control your presence. Like, you can control the narrative, what people say or what people, you know, believe about you, because there's no information about you out there. You know what the smartest thing I ever did? Oh my God, it was so smart. I've talked about this in videos before. I was in college and I went on these websites where you can search people's private information, like their address, their phone number, all of their personal background information. It was called Spokio. Mm-hmm. They were collecting private data information. I learned about this through someone that you could email them and say, you can't collect my data. And so I emailed them. And so if you search my name on that website, you cannot find any history of me. I'm a ghost on that website. I'm on certain websites. Like, you cannot search for my criminal background history, any personal history for me at all. I am a ghost on that website because I tried searching for my phone number for, because I was trying to hack into my, I'm not trying to hack, I'm trying to reset my password on my Apple ID, that because I broke that phone during my first manic episode in Seattle. And so mm-hmm. I'm trying to log into that Apple ID so I can look at the pictures on that phone, part of my digital footprint, which I can mm-hmm. log in 7 days from now. So I'm going to be able to see those photos from Seattle that I took with that phone that were uploaded.
Do you think you're going to like keep them or delete them or?
I'm going to keep them. I'm going to post about it. I'm going to see what pictures, because you saw that I was posting on my account, Strange Nothings account, pictures from videos and stuff from my time in Seattle. People, also weirdos, are like, post more sleep streams. And I'm like,
oh my God, I saw that. I was just like, these are getting views, Ari. What's going on?
People have weird fetishes. That's all.
Oh my goodness. That's another like downside of the internet, right? Like,
that's a downside of having an online presence. The upside is that you have a voice and that people will listen to what you have to say. And that if you have a large enough platform, you can make social change, like John Green making a social change about the tuberculosis generic vaccination. So online social presence gets you good points and change, makes a great social change. But also not being visible online makes it so that you can maneuver yourself through the world and you can live your life free of expectations and free of judgment from other people.
Well, and so like, and free of that pressure too. Like, so I feel like from the get-go, like, especially like with YouTube and stuff like that, I was really motivated like on the social change front. And when I wanted to have like this platform and to make an influence, and then one thing, and I know you can probably relate with this too, like sometimes you get so caught up in the numbers, and when you don't see the numbers working to your advantage, like that kind of just like extinguishes your flame a bit, like and I think that kind of creates like that performative pressure, right? Interestingly, years later, I've gotten to this point where like I'm like, I'm going to put this out there. Like, if it gets a view, great. If it doesn't, I don't care. Like, I'm enjoying it. That's what matters, right? Like, I'm feeling wholesome. I am, my life is feeling enriched by creating the content, not necessarily like the oohs and ahs and stuff like that.
I did, when I had my other channel before I deleted it, I told you I did a social experiment with, where I was like challenging views, and I was like, and I basically like tried as best as I could to get views. And I was basically on my tarot channel, I bought views to see what the difference was. I bought views on one video and then realized that when you bought views, all of a sudden the algorithm picked it up and would make views on other videos. And so what it was is social media is fake. You can buy mm-hmm. yourself. You can buy yourself a presence if you want.
On any social media site, you can run an ad, like an AdSense thing. And it like, but like, of course that requires money to do so.
I mean, anything requires social. But it literally only cost me like $20. And I had, mm-hmm. I had more than 20,000 views on my videos for a while. And it literally, so I was like, social media is fake. You can buy viewers. You can buy presence. All the numbers are fake. It doesn't matter what you do. As long mm-hmm. if you're posting regularly, if you have good thumbnails, it doesn't, if you have a good title, it does not, all of it's fake. It's all fake. It does not matter. It's all ridiculous. So I was just like, most of these things are just robots anyway. So it does not matter. Like I care about comments and engagement. And that's like the thing that makes me feel joy is when people actually like will engage with you and have a conversation with you. And like, that's the thing that brings me the most joy is when people actually like step out of their, because the numbers to me don't matter as much.
Well, I think that at the end of the day, that's what social media was initially about. But like consumerism takes social media, like commercialization takes social media and is like, oh, well, it's not that engagement that matters. It's getting those numbers, you know, like that's where that performative pressure comes in, you know? Let's see. I should keep up on the comments here. Sapphire Zeev made a comment about like people posting about divorce and playing the blame game. Oh, it's always messy to see people's drama, right? Not that I'm never entertained by it.
No, it's so bad.
RP says, I wish Facebook would let you put music on your page.
Then it would be MySpace.
Right. Godzilla Kairu is here. Hello, it's good to see you. So, why would you want to delete images or videos of yourself online? I think we already talked about it already, right?
So I think that if you are able to like delete videos and images of yourself, like off of like search engines and things like that, it goes back to things like revenge porn or like people mm-hmm. posting things out of like a way of like trying to humiliate you online. Being able to like delete those images or from like search engines or just like social media. So like when people Google your name, that's not the first thing they see. Or like when people take like humiliating videos of you in like a very like compromising situation and it's like that goes viral. It's like, do you really want that circulating around and people knowing all of your name and it is attached to this one situation right. in which it's like, and that thing goes viral and it's like, do you want that really associated with you? You know, I think back to a situation a few years ago. There was, I was friends with Kitty. Do you remember Kitty?
Mm-hmm.
So she was at an event. She was at an event, and she was at a LARP event. You know, like where she was doing like she was not cosplaying, but you know, using the
role
swords.
Role playing,
but she was playing with the swords and stuff, you know, doing acrostic stuff. So somebody took a picture of her falling over and she was caught in a very compromising circumstance. And she was so nervous that somebody was going to post that online and it was going to go viral. I remember this story. And so she was so nervous about this picture getting out there because she said it was so meme worthy, that it was such a meme-y. And she was like, because she's not a small person. So she was so concerned about how her image looked and she was so concerned about looking a certain way. And she was afraid that she was going to be, because she was in a compromising position. She was so afraid of that image getting out and that people were going to meme it and that she was going to be the product of this humiliating situation in which people were going to make fun of her. So she was just like, she showed me this photo, but she was like, don't, you can't own this. I can't share this photo with you. I'm just showing this photo, but like, do not share it. Do not do anything with it. I'm just showing you this photo. but it was sort of like, it was just like, she was so scared that it was going to get out and get onto the leak onto the internet, and other people were going to see it. And it was going to be like part of the internet culture, because it was one of those photos that was just sort of like a, you know, kind of like a fatality photo kind of thing. And she was just like, I don't know what I would do if it got out.
Yeah. No, like that fear, that, I mean, that fear is significant. Like, I know I dated somebody once a few years ago, who, like, he kind of had like this, romantic fixation with like taking intimate photos. Right. Mm-hmm. And like, he, whenever I wasn't looking, like if I was like half naked or completely, would be taking photos of me and stuff like that. And like, it was kind of spun to me like as like this good thing, right? But then like after like he was completely done with me, because you know that's how it goes, like I could not, like I was like, what if like he gets mad at me and retaliates and posts these photos, like, or what if, like, it is scary to think about that type of thing.
I have, so there, after I broke up with one of my boyfriends, I have a sinking suspicion that there, so some of these photos weren't of my face. There was a photo of someone's legs trying to get into a pair of shorts. And I had taken a photo of me trying to get into these pair of shorts before. And I don't know how he would have gotten a hold of this photo, but I had taken a picture of myself trying to get into these shorts. I think that he tried to take some photos of myself that were in compromising positions. And as revenge, he had posted them as memes online, as a way of getting back at me. I don't know if they were of me, but I think they were, because they looked familiar to me. Mm-hmm. Like when I saw them, I was like, that looks like me, but I don't know how he would have gotten a hold of those photos unless he, you know, but it's possible that he had, because he had come over a couple times and like, I could see him getting a hold of my cell phone in certain ways, or I don't know. It's possible, but I was like, I could see him getting a hold of my photos somehow. Or like someone texting him the photos. I don't know. But, or like, because I had left my cell phone like at an event and like he had gotten a hold of it that way. But, I could see him getting a hold of those photos somehow and just using them to his own advantage.
Yeah. But it's scary. Like, I guess at the end of the day, like, be careful, everyone. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, social media is great. Having a digital footprint is great. But like, who you invite into that digital footprint and who has any form of control over your digital footprint, like, that's, those are important things to consider, right?
And it's so awful, because like, you share intimate videos of yourself, like doing like sexy photos of yourself, especially with like, you know, a partner or someone, you think like, hey, this is never going to come back to bite me. And then maybe it will. And you never know. Like, that's the thing. Like, it's so worrisome. You know, you think about that and you just like, you think like, maybe this, like, you always like, you trust this person now, but like, you have to always wonder like, what's the long-term result of this? And so like, absolutely, that's why you always have to wonder, like, taking a photo, what's the long-term result of this?
Right. No, that's so true. Like, that actually was so like ingrained in my mind, like after I dated this person, because I was just like I always would have control over like my image and like the images that were taken. Like, I never had anyone like take compromising photos of me like that before, right? So like, it was kind of scary. So do you have a media policy in case of death? Like, do you, like, people know like how to access your stuff? Like, I think that's an important thing to consider as well, because like, the ultimately our digital footprint is an extension of who we are. Like, who do we give that access to if there's an emergency, right?
I used to have all of my passwords written down in a place that people could find it. and that they were able to access everything. I don't think that I currently have everything written down, but I know that I don't keep my phone locked anymore. So if people just needed to get into my phone, they could.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I think like, there's like maybe only a couple of people who might know like that access information necessary. Like, you know, if something were to ever happen, right? I've come to learn that it's important to keep that few, like, because you don't know what people will do with that information either, right? Mm-hmm. So I guess what parting words do we have for the episode? So like, what advice do you have for people when it comes to digital footprints?
Just be safe. You know, I'm not trying to scare you about like sharing things with people or sharing your information online or sharing your image online. I do think that you should be joyful. And if you want to have an online presence, you should. But I've noticed as I've gotten older, I've definitely wanted to reduce the amount that I've wanted to be online. I think that there's something about youth that there's wanting to share and communicate and wanting mm-hmm. to have a presence online, because it's this shiny, fun, interesting thing. But as I've gotten older, the more I've realized that these companies use your information and stuff for nefarious purposes. And so the less I've wanted to share things online.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally get that. I think for me, like, I mean, the truth is, like, we live in a pretty cool time where we do have, like, this connectivity with everyone, right? However, as I've grown older as well, like, I've learned that it's not about the frequency in which I put content out there. It's the quality of it and what that ultimately does for me, right? Mm-hmm. Like, moving from doing it for everyone else versus doing it for me, like, that was a complete shift in my head, and it reduced that pressure. And now it's allowed me the opportunity to, you know, use social media and do what I want to do with it, like, in an enriching way, as opposed to it just being like this chore or assembly line type thing that I used to feel that it was. So,
yeah, I guess, like, I feel like the grind is over as far as that goes. Yeah. Like,
absolutely. I guess my parting words would be like, be safe with it. Be who you want to be on it. Just make sure that you are always being mindful of that. Mm-hmm. So, well, my friends, we have reached the end of another wonderful conversation. It was great to have you all here. Just know that we love you and that, you know, we will see you on the next round. So between now and then, we'll see you later. Bye.
Bye.
Love you.